And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherDigest.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you back to a little bit of a somber Thursday edition of the podcast previewing the Gophers game against Purdue this weekend. Luke, I didn't expect coming into the season I would be nervous about this game, but you're having a hard time telling me I shouldn't be nervous right now.
Yeah, I haven't found a way to convince you yet. I'll maybe work through it, but the thing that I'm curious about to talk to you about, I haven't gotten a chance to really look at the injury report, but I feel like we've been talking injuries all season on the podcast over and over and over. It's been a general theme, and again, this is going to be no different. So what do we have to expect this season or in this game in terms of injuries?
Well, before I tell you, I want everybody listening to pull up a chair, sit down, because it's going to be a while. Starting today, I literally... I'm very curious to see when the depth chart's put out, how many people are ruled out. Jerry Kill said today on KFAN during his weekly radio show, there could be as many as 8 starters out against Purdue. 8 of 22, folks. It's just, it's been a massacre.
Right.
I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, it starts up front. You have Jonah Persig is probably going to be shifting back to right tackle. Which means, well, since he's been playing left tackle the last few games, what does that mean? To me, that means Josh Campion is going to slide back to the left, barring he's healthy. I mean, Kill is very tight-lipped about these injuries.
Right.
You have Joe Bjorklund, who left the game against Northwestern, midway through the second quarter. I'm not putting a lot of stock into him playing at a high level this weekend. He's so injured with that knee. There was good news that John Christensen was practicing this week, and I originally heard he was going to be back for the Michigan game, so getting him back potentially 3 weeks early would be huge, but maybe we see a rotation of Bjorklund and Christensen potentially. What I am hearing at the center is that it's not looking good for Brian Bobeck to play. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if Tyler Moore burns his red shirt and is your starting center against Purdue this weekend. Sounds like Brian got banged up a little bit in practice. I'm not going to divulge too much into the injury, as I don't think it's been discussed, but I would be very surprised if Tyler Moore isn't your starting center. It's not looking good. And then the other thing I should touch on is that I've heard today, and I haven't confirmed it yet, but it sounds like Ace Rogers, the Gophers starting nickelback heading into the TCU game, could be lost for the year with an ACL tear. Put that together with Demarius Travis, the Gophers starting safety, is still out with a hamstring, and Brian Body Calhoun, the All-American corner, is also out with a knee injury. It's Minnesota's MASH. I don't know how else to put it. I mean,
yeah, they've been decimated by injury, and it started, you know, even before the season started with, you know, Lincoln Plezic and Duke Onyanwu going down, we've seen neither of them yet this season. Not sure that we'll see them at all, you know, at the tight end position. It's been the injuries have just been stacking up and stacking up and stacking up. And you know, one of the things about football is it's one of the things you need, especially in college football, is depth. And it felt like going into this season that they had more depth, but they've really been testing this depth so far with all the injuries.
I don't know how you can prepare for 20 injuries. I literally don't know how you do it. Kill said yesterday after practice, he held out 20 players out of practice in a Wednesday. I mean, that's game prep day. You're in full pads.
Yep.
20 of 85 scholarships.
Yeah,
we're held out. I'm trying to figure out how you field a team that's competitive in the Big Ten when you have 20 players that are missing practice.
I think your example, you know, of this is 2013 Northwestern. They were decimated by injury. Pretty high expectations for that team, similar to Minnesota. And you know, they definitely didn't get to 6-6. I don't even know what the record was, but you know, that was a team that had high expectations and wasn't able to meet them, and that was primarily due to injury. You know, health has a big role in this game.
Absolutely. I mean, don't give me all the credit here for the Northwestern take. I think you and I were talking beforehand, and that was all you. But that was a Northwestern team in 2013 that started out 4-0, including wins over California at Cal and Syracuse. and then they got decimated by injury and then didn't win another game until the last game of the year. It was just, they were competitive in every single game, but they just, the injuries eventually caught up to them. And I'm sitting here tonight wondering if that's what this 2015 season is going to end up as or what could have been, because I just, you look at the secondary, Luke, you're down Boddy, you're down Demaryius, you're down Ace Rogers, okay? You're starting Kunle Ayinde, that's safety again, he's a walk-on. No, that's, I mean, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way at all, but you're starting, I mean, Kunle Ayinde, you have Antonio Johnson, who's
been
healthy,
banged up.
Yep, and then, you lose Craig James because he has a broken bone in his leg, and you lose Ace Rogers, so now what does that mean? That means you're going to be playing two true freshmen, Keontae Harden and Antonio Chanel, and they're going to be getting a ton of reps. Again, as talented as they are, as talented as Jay Sobel is with these secondary kids, and as talented as Tracy Clays is, there's going to be mistakes now because you're playing true freshmen. Yes, you have Eric Murray. Yes, you have Jalen Myrick. I mean, I'm seriously knocking on wood right now because that's the season it's been. I'm not making excuses for this team. I don't want anybody to think
no,
I am.
No, no.
I'm just telling you, this is the reality. You're playing true freshmen in the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the polar opposite of 2014 for this Gopher team, where the defensive line couldn't catch a break. Mm-hmm. Now it's literally every other position can't catch a break while defensive line stays healthy. I feel for these offensive coaches. I mean, I somewhat feel for Lime Grover, and I somewhat don't, just because the, you don't score zero. I mean, you score 0 points.
Yeah.
We have to get. I mean, I understand the offensive line is going to be a true freshman, a true sophomore, two banged up left guards who are at about 60-70%, right tackle and Jonah Perzig, who's probably at about 75-80%, and then Josh Campion, who had a concussion again in the last few weeks here. I'm just sitting here laughing because if you would have told me this when we were making our season predictions 6-7 weeks ago, I would have laughed at you and said, really, we held 20 people out of practice on a Wednesday?
Yeah.
Really? But it's the reality, man. And now we're heading into a Purdue team who, as people, will be listening to, Brock Reese is extremely, extremely confident that Purdue's going to win, and they're going to win by at least 3 touchdowns. I understand that maybe a flaming hot take, people, but when you listen to his rationale, you can make a case for it. And this Gopher team needs to get something going on offense, Luke. I think that's the number one key, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, they definitely need to. They definitely need to do something on offense. If they can, I mean, you can't win games if you don't score points. As dumb as that sounds, you can't win games if you don't score points.
The identity to Minnesota, and Kill has talked about it, that he's not happy how much they're passing and that he wants to get back to the running game. How do you get back to the running game when your offensive line can't open a hole because they're either, still learning how to play in the Big Ten, i.e. Connor Mays and Tyler Moore, or they're too banged up in Joe Perzig, if I could get names right today, Joe Bjorklund, John Christensen, Jonah Perzig. I mean, the list goes on, and I've fielded a ton of questions this week. Where's the depth? Well, here's the depth. It's you go 8 or 9 deep on the offensive line. That's what you're supposed to be comfortable with going in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 6 of your 7, 8, or 9 are injured.
Right.
And Kittle talked about it today on the radio show. The two guys they missed the most, he thinks, is Epping and Olsen.
Yeah.
It's tough to not agree with that. I mean, I think that Brian Bobek, and for the first 5 games, has done a hell of a job. Again, a kid who hasn't played in 2.5 years in a collegiate game, he's come in and he's probably been the best grading out offensive lineman that Minnesota's had. I'd have a hard time arguing against it. The issue is now he's got a little bit of, he's banged up a little bit, and so Tyler Moore's probably going to have to play. So you're throwing in a true freshman. It's just the guys who play well seem to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to explain it. And so do you look back at 2011 and say, I wish Tommy Olsen hadn't played? I believe he only played exclusively on special teams that year, and that's because Minnesota needed bodies. I mean, how much would you love to have him back so he could be playing left guard, Brian and Bobic at center? And it's just, I don't know, man. There's some things that need to be figured out, and I feel bad for this defense.
Yeah.
Because this defense is playing at an extremely high level. You know, they only gave 13 points to a Northwestern team. That's pretty dang good. You know, they've done well all season, and the issue is they literally can't catch a break from the offense, who's going through a lot of struggles right now. But I don't know, man. It's going to be an interesting game this weekend.
Yeah, it will be interesting, and you're right. The offense, they've been banged up all year, and the defense has played well despite, you know, being pretty banged up themselves. It's just an unfortunate situation. You got to find a way to get through it. You know, Coach Kill constantly talks about the adversity that you face as a football team, and then you'll face in life, and on and on and on. I mean, they're up against it right now in a very real way.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, from being at the press conference on Tuesday, I think that was the most. Trying to find the correct word, you know, Kill was extremely fiery, not in a snippy way towards the media, but he wants to get this thing fixed in the worst way. And he and Lime Grover are doing, I think Lime Grover said, or Kill said, I forget which one said it, they were up till, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. You know, typically the coaches are here, getting here at 6 in the morning. They leave 9, 10 o'clock at night, 16-hour days. You know, they've been working, you know, 18, 19-hour days away from the families. And, again, I'm not giving them excuses. I'm not trying to do anything of the sort. I'm telling you that the staff is trying to do everything they can to fix it. And the issue is, I mean, I would love your thoughts on this. I don't see a quick fix for this offense considering all the injuries. Do you?
No, I don't see a quick fix for the offense. But, you know, if you want to look at an example, it's not the same in terms of the injuries that they faced. But I'm thinking it was the year they went to Iowa and they got absolutely destroyed. It feels a lot like that. But then they turned around and they were able to win, I think, 4 more Big Ten games. I'm trying to think of what year that was. That might have been 2013.
I think it was 2013.
Yeah, yep. I think that was the 2013 season. So, you know, they've found ways. You know, the offense was probably better in 2013. Well, no, it's not that probably better. It was better in 2013. it was obviously better in 2013, but, you know, they found ways to win some ball games against, you know, quality opponents. Now, granted, their schedule is more difficult here in 2015. Their offense is worse, but you hope that they can find ways maybe to get healthy at some spots or get a little bit more healthy and find a way to gel on an offensive line, you know, be able to run the ball a little bit more and then maybe, you know, use play action here and there to spring some big plays.
Absolutely. And that's something we'll touch on. You know, after we talk with Brock, is what are the keys to the game? I think establishing a running game is going to go a long way towards that. The last thing I think we should talk about before we head into the interview with Mr. Brock Reich is that Kill announced today that Mitch Leidner will be the starter against Purdue. He was trying to keep it quiet at the press conference Tuesday. He was saying, you know, you guys don't need to know that. Wednesday, he was talking about how Mitch and Demery have split reps. And then today, he let the cat out of the bag and said Mitch Leidner will be the starter heading into Purdue. Before I give my thoughts on that, Luke, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't really care who he names the starter, because in years past have showed this, they're not afraid to play two quarterbacks. The red shirt's off. There's absolutely no reason that you need to try to keep Demery Croft on the sidelines. So I'm sure that they'll have packages for him. I don't see any reason why he won't play in some capacity in this game. So starter, no starter, I don't think it really matters to me at this point. I think Demery and Mitch both see time.
Yeah. I'm in the boat that, as we talked about on Monday, that the red shirt's off Demery. The season isn't heading in the upward trajectory like I thought, like you thought, like all fans thought, because of all the injuries and the lack of the downfield passing game, yada, yada, yada. But I just have a hard time believing now that Demery isn't the guy that gives you a best chance to win. I think that Limeover can design a game plan on to, you know, best fit Demery's abilities. And I think that while some fans may be laughing and saying, haha, Matt Limeover can't do anything, I think that if you do roll with Demery, you simplify everything. You simplify the game plan on the offensive line, with the running backs, and most importantly, with the quarterback. What does that mean? I think that it's short timing routes, get Demery going a little bit. He's very accurate when he gets his feet under him. He can read the defense a little bit. And again, I think it opens up the downfield passing game, but I don't even want to talk about that because we're going to keep throwing fade to guys who are 5'10" and Eric Carter and KJ May, while Isaiah Gentry and Rashad Still, 6'4" and 6'6" respectively. You know, again, I will not. That's something I don't understand. I don't understand why we're throwing fades to Eric Carter instead of Isaiah Gentry. But I don't want to go off on a huge tangent more than I already have. Anyways, I think that Demery gives this team the best chance to win. I think that it is that way. Now that his red shirt's burned, I thought that Mitch was the guy getting into the season and because of injuries. And Kill finally came out and said that Mitch is dealing with some injuries. Again, Luke, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it finally makes sense whether, you know, that they would finally say this because Kill is extremely secretive on his quarterback injuries. He doesn't like the opponent to know anything, mm-hmm. especially on his quarterback. But it explains the lack of read option. It explains why Mitch hasn't been keeping him. It explains why Mitch hasn't been as explosive. I mean, fans should be nodding in agreement because, I mean, if you've watched it, Mitch looks a step slow compared to last year.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you have a banged-up Leidner versus a true freshman, Demery Croft. There's a lot of risk-reward with both. I can see it, but I don't know, man. It's something that it's going to have to play out this weekend. I think that they're probably going to split time. I would still lean towards Leidner getting 70% of the snaps and Croft's only getting 30. But if Minnesota doesn't win this game, you got a hard time convincing me heading into Nebraska that Demery Croft should be tied. It's not Mitch's fault that his offensive line is a mass unit, but you have to think about the future and you have to think about the 2016 schedule, which is significantly easier than this year. Mm-hmm. And if this offense can get going a little bit and build some momentum towards the next year, I think that could pay dividends. But again, the next thing we got coming for you guys here is we're going to talk to Mr. Brock Reich. He is the sports editor of the Purdue Exponent there at West Lafayette, so stay tuned. All right, welcome back, and we are now joined by one of the elite Purdue Boilermaker football minds in all of America, Mr. Brock Reich from the Purdue Exponent, the paper there in West Lafayette. He is the sports editor, and we're lucky to have him joining us. All right, Brock, so to start things off here, obviously Purdue is 1-4 in the year, but to me, it feels like there's a different vibe around the team. You know, they haven't been getting blown out. They've been very competitive in a lot of games. I mean, what do you think about the vibe around this Boilermaker team, and what have you learned about them through the first five games?
Yeah, the vibe is definitely 100% positive around this team right now. Coaches, starters, backups, all the way down to the scout team at practice, there's no negativity. Even after some of those close games, those hard losses, they're coming back, we're going to win the next one. That's just been the mentality the entire time. I think the biggest thing for them right now is the fact they have not lost hope at all. A lot of fans, a lot of people will say it's all Hazel's fault. A lot of people are pointing the finger to Hazel and his coaching staff, and the team still has 100% faith in him. You can tell watching a team if they still believe in what they're doing and what the coaching staff is saying, and Purdue absolutely does. I think that's what's really keeping that positive vibe going.
All right, Brock, curious, I saw that recently you guys made a quarterback switch. Tell us about the redshirt freshman and how he's looked and what some of his strengths are.
Yeah, David Blau, after 3 weeks, I'm sure you know, Appleby just was turning the ball over. That was the biggest problem the coaches pointed to. It was really the only problem the coaches would point out. Just Appleby was turning the ball over, and they said, we can't have that. David Blau, he was competing for the spot. It wasn't announced until right before the season started. So he was competing for it all spring, through fall camp, and he hasn't disappointed. During his first start, there were definitely some inconsistencies, things you would expect from a redshirt freshman quarterback taking his first start. The thing that Coach Shoup pointed out when I was talking to him was just not being quite as comfortable as he needed to be in the pocket, maybe checking down when he had something open deep. Even just last week, there was a post-wheel combo, and he saw the wheel, felt comfortable there. The post was wide open. So it's just little things like that, little decision-making things that he's still improving on. And through practice and through the games he has played, there's definitely been progress made there. From a leadership standpoint, there's been no issue. Everyone on the team was fully accepting of Appleby. And when this switch came, there was no negative vibes with the team. The linemen, 100% supportive of this young quarterback. He's been a solid leader for him on the field. Everyone respects him. That's really one of the biggest things he brings. There hasn't been, you would expect with a changing quarterback, there would be a difference in mentality maybe in the team. And when Purdue switched quarterbacks, that was the only switch, was the quarterback. It was really the only thing that changed. And he has taken care of the football considerably well. Threw an interception last week against Michigan State. People see that on a stat sheet, but it was on a fourth down play near the end of the half, just looking deep. He's taken care of the football and made good decisions thus far, and that's really what the team needed from him.
And another thing I was looking at when I was analyzing the Purdue team here with the Gophers playing them this upcoming Saturday is that you guys have a true freshman running back in Markell Jones, who has absolutely been a bell cow for the last two games anyway. I know against Michigan State he had 22 carries for 157 yards and two touchdowns. I mean, that's saying something against that top-ranked Michigan State defense. Is he the guy here going forward, and what have you seen from him?
I don't know if I'd call him the guy yet. He is definitely a guy. Purdue, all the way back, as long as I've been talking to Coach Hazel about this season, they knew it was going to be a running back by committee type deal. And DJ Knox, the sophomore, has been impressive as well. Markell Jones was 2014 Indiana Mr. Football. Everyone had high hopes for him, and we really expected him to be a complement to the sophomore. But he's shown that he can be a lot more than that, and he can be a guy to lean on as a starter should that need come, which it did last week. DJ Knox was hurt during the Bowling Green game, had a helmet bruise to his back. They tried him at Michigan State. He only got two carries, and it became clear he wasn't going to be able to contribute. And that is when Markell really got going. He's impressed everybody, including himself. I just talked to him yesterday. I asked, is there anything that's still a freshman about Markell Jones? And he said, no, there's not. He came to campus early. He enrolled in January. So he said he worked out all those freshman jitters early, a lot of things that a freshman player would face with classes and just trying to adapt to college. And he got that out of the way early. And it's really allowed him to excel into that role as a starter-like player. I don't think he will get the start on Saturday. Hazel is the type of guy who has faith in the guys he's been playing and been starting. DJ, I don't think, since he missed the last game due to an injury, I don't think Hazel will use that as a platform to replace him with this start. I think Markell Jones will get more and more touches as the season goes on, and if it becomes apparent that he's contributing far more than DJ consistently, I think we can see him getting the starts later on in the season, but I think it's Knox this Saturday.
And again, folks, for people who are just, you know, joining in here, we're joined by Mr. Brock Reese. He is the sports editor for the Purdue Exponent there in West Lafayette, and we're happy to have him. So let's transition to the defensive side of the ball now, Brock. I know that there's a very good linebacker there again in Juwan Bentley, but what else, what is the strength of this Purdue defense, and who else are a few names to keep an eye on for the game Saturday?
Yeah, when I think about the Purdue defense, I try not to zero in on one player. That's just not the type of defense. Some defenses can rely on one solid linebacker, and he's the core of their defense. Purdue has survived, despite the record. They've been hanging in these games because they're solid across the entire defensive unit. The defensive line's been able to get some pressure on quarterbacks. They're anchored in the secondary by two senior cornerbacks in Frankie Williams and Anthony Brown. Those guys have really stepped up. The coaching staff has had a lot of faith in them. Since they've been here, especially now that they're both seniors. But again, consistent play just across the entire defense. Nothing extraordinary, no single standouts. If you have to pick a couple guys to watch, as you mentioned, Jawan Bentley, he leads the team in tackles. Everyone looks up to him. He's a team captain as a sophomore. The first time that there's been a sophomore captain under Hazel. Kind of a side note here, Hazel allowed the team to vote on a captain this year. It's usually all upperclassmen. But he allowed a write-in vote, and the team picked a Jawan. That's how much the team thinks of him, and that's how much he contributes. He brings a lot to the defense, and he's definitely a guy to watch. Another one is Jalen Robinson, who plays the rush end position. He the first two games of the season due to a suspension for an off-season incident, and he maybe came in a little rusty, just missing those first two games. But I've talked to defensive coordinator Greg Hudson, along with Robinson himself, and they both feel he's where he needs to be. Hazel always points to him as the strong guy. Even if he misses something technically, some technique thing, his strength is going to show through always. And he's really caught up to where he needs to be. That's one I would definitely watch out for.
All right, so if Purdue's going to pull off the win at home this week, what are some of the keys for them against Minnesota?
Yeah, I believe Purdue has been on an upswing this entire season. The record obviously isn't great, but you have to think just last week, just 3 points short of then number two Michigan State. I believe they do pull off the win this weekend, and the key is going to be, like we talked about with Jones and Knox, the ground game. They've got to get that going. So far this season, when they've been able to pick up traction on the ground game, that's when they're keeping these games close. If those two guys can't get going, it gets out of hand pretty quickly, and Purdue is not the type of team that can play from behind and rely on a two-minute drill type of offense for an extended period of time. That's where I would look for the most, the running game. In that Michigan State game, they gave up 14 points on first half turnovers. That very well could have been the difference in the game. So that's another key. If they want to pull out the win this Saturday, they cannot turn the ball over. The coaches have been preaching it. The players have been preaching it. It's the buzz around campus. Why are we turning the ball over so much? It's a great question. So that's 14 points that's 14 points last week. The defense held Michigan State to just 3 points in the second half. So those turnovers very easily could have been the difference. That's something everybody's pointing to, and that could be a huge key this Saturday.
All right, last question here for you, Brock. You and I have talked a little bit before this, and you helped me out with the preview article, which is on Gopher Digest right now. But before I ask you about your prediction, I think fans have already read it. You have Purdue beating Minnesota 31-10. Explain.
I'm really going off just what I've seen, kind of the projected progress this team has made. Coming up short in week one against Marshall, that hurt. I think that kind of woke them up. Week two against Indiana State, Virginia Tech, things obviously didn't go the way they wanted them to. But if you look just last week, like I said, in that second half, the defense held Michigan State, the number two ranked team, to 3 points in that half. And that's the kind of defense I believe this team is capable of playing. Minnesota's offense has clearly been struggling, averaging, I believe, around 15 points a game. I think that the Purdue defense has woken up and realizes what they need to do. I don't think Minnesota's going to be able to move the ball like they want to against this Purdue defense. And with David Blau at quarterback, his decision-making's been getting better and better every drive. I really see him being able to lead this offense and put up some points. Again, if they get the ground game going, if Markell Jones has half the game he had against Michigan State, that's going to translate to a lot of points for Purdue. I really see it playing out fairly well into Purdue's favor.
Well, there you go. I think Gopher fans may be shaking their heads, but some may be nodding in agreement with you, because this Gopher offense has been lacking, to put it in nice terms. But again, well, we thank Mr. Brock Reese. He is the sports editor for the Purdue Exponent there in West Lafayette. So, again, Brock, Gopher fans are hoping your prediction is wrong, but we appreciate having you on the Gopher Gridiron Podcast Radio. So, again, thank you, Brock, and take care.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Ryan. So we've got a perspective out of Purdue. Obviously, you know, some confidence there out of Brock. Feeling confident coming out of playing, the number two team in the country, very tough. Granted, you know, it sounds like Michigan State is decimated on offense by injury as well. But let's transition and let's talk about keys to the game for this Gopher game against Purdue.
Yeah, again, fans, you're just tuning back in. He made some okay points. Like it's not crazy. It's crazy for me to even think that. But the number one key to the game, I think, is if Minnesota can establish a run game. This is a Purdue defense. While Brock may think it's elite, they did give up 267 yards on the ground last week and two touchdowns on 47 carries. So, and while fans may think there's probably a huge long run in there, 70, 80 yards or so, there wasn't. The longest run that Michigan State had was 30 yards, and they gave up over 5.5 yards per carry. So, again, mm-hmm. Where does Minnesota try to make their bread and butter? It's in the run game. So I think Shannon Brooks and I think Rodney Smith are going to have to find some holes, and they're going to have to exploit them, and they're going to have to break a long run, because that leads me to my second point, is Minnesota is going to need an explosive play to win. They have one play over 40 yards this entire season on offense, and that one play is a 40-yard run from Shannon Brooks for the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get something going explosively, because this is an offense that I don't think can sustain 15, 18-play drives, just because they don't – I mean, there's just so many inexperienced players that, again, there's going to be a mistake here or there. It is what it is. These are young guys, especially at the playmaking positions – and at certain positions on the offensive line, they're going to make mistakes. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to need to, open up some big plays here. And, before I toss it back to you here, Luke, the last thing that I would love to see is my last key to the game here is downfield passing. There wasn't any against Northwestern, and Minnesota scored 0 points. Yes, I understand that the wins were 25-35, Yeah, I understand that. But, again, they didn't even attempt it. I mean, the longest one was like a 20-yard fade to Eric Carter on the sidelines late in the fourth. Is that the lack of confidence in your quarterback? I would argue that's some of it. Is that the lack of, trust in your offensive line to give you enough time to set up a 4 or 5 second developing play? Yeah, that's some of it. I mean, or is it, kind of lack of confidence in your playmaking receivers? I think all three are huge contributors, but you have to take a shot downfield. It's just, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it's the risk there, and I know how Coach Kill is all about risk aversion. Fans saw that against, I believe it was Ohio, where the Gophers won 10-7. All they did was run right up the middle the entire second half. That's because Kill didn't want to chance it, and he knew his defense was still good. He's got to start rolling the dice a little bit more. And, maybe that starts with, a surprise onside kick, something. But they need to get some kind of an explosive play, a game-changing play, to get moving. I mean, what are your keys to the game, Luke?
Yeah, I think they're the same, pretty similar to you. So if you look at Purdue, they've struggled mightily against the run. They're giving up 193 yards per game. Minnesota really, that's their identity. They want to run the ball, but they haven't been able to for an assortment of reasons. A couple of those being, one, they've played Kent State and Northwestern, who are two of the top, run stuffing defenses in the country. Also, they've got the banged up offensive line. So if there's a time that if you can't get going against Purdue and running the ball, I don't know when they will be able to, looking at this schedule going forward. So they got to be able to run the ball. And if you run the ball, then you're right. You got to be able to execute in the play action game. If they can't do that, they're not going to win this game. And then I agree with you. They need to have an explosive play as well. I also think that they need to start winning in special teams. This is something the last couple weeks that they've really, really, really struggled at. If you're not winning in the special teams game, historically kill teams have executed quite well in special teams. I just don't see how they win if they can't win in the kicking game. The kick return game, the kicking game, all those functions. So look for a big play out of special teams or maybe a defensive score if they're going to pull this game off. But, you know, got to run the ball, got to play action well. And those are really, really vital to their success this week in Purdue.
I agree. So here to wrap up the podcast here, Luke, what is your prediction? Does Minnesota get their first Big Ten win of the season, or does Purdue get their first Big Ten home win in the Darryl Hazel era?
Okay, so if I were a betting man and I was looking at the data that we have in front of us, you look at a Minnesota team that I think has won all of their games by 3 points. Am I not correct? Yes, I think so.
See, Colorado State was a game-winning field goal. Ohio was a three-point victory. And Kent State, yep, you are right.
All right, so we know the point differential then. So I'm going to go with 24-21, and Minnesota is going to win. I don't know. I just think that they're going to find a way to run the ball as a point of emphasis. I got to feel like they got to pull this off to salvage their season. So I may be going a little bit on the homer side, but I think that they pull it off. I don't think there are going to be a lot of fans at these games. The attendance at Purdue has been pretty putrid thus far, you know, maybe 40,000 a game. So I think Minnesota pulls it off, but they're going to need a strong start as well. They have to start strong in that first, second quarter on offense especially.
Tell me where we get 24 points from. Where do we get 24 points?
I said earlier, either a special teams or defensive touchdown, and I also think that they're going to be able to run the ball a little bit. And then, yeah, I don't know, 24-21.
I've been wrestling with this all day. I'm running up my preview article that'll go live on Gopher Digest tomorrow. And like, I want to believe Minnesota's going to win, and I have, and that's what I'm going to predict. I am predicting Minnesota's going to win and get their fourth win of the season, but it's going to be ugly. Like I'm not talking like ugly. I'm talking like ugly. I have Minnesota winning 17-14. I'm even asking myself right now, Luke, where does Minnesota get 2 touchdowns? Where? I want to believe that they can establish the run. Want to believe that. The issue is, again, this offensive line is just beat to heck. They are.
Yeah.
And your quarterback, if it's Mitch Leidner, is having issues completing passes downfield, and he's hurt, and he's throwing off his back foot, and I think he's even in his own head. And can you blame him for all the scrutiny this guy gets? I mean, it's tough to believe in yourself when I'm not getting into the mental mindset of a quarterback. Anyways, I do think that 7 of these 17 points are going to come from a special teams or defensive touchdown. As Brock said, Purdue is very turnover. You know, they're very turnover happy as of late.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Eric Murray gets his first career interception return for a touchdown. Steven Richardson forced fumble. Julian Huff returns it for a touchdown. Maybe Jalen Myrick can get something going in the kick return game. I think that the offense is going to need help. And I have enough trust in Tracy Clays, as he's proven. I mean, he technically, again, if you want to look at silver linings, the defense only gave up 13 points last week. Liner scoop and score, and a punt return down to the 5 that you can't put on the defense. I'm struggling here, Luke, but the Purdue passing game, the new quarterback there, David Blough, has attempted 35 passes since he's been named starter, so they're going to pass the ball a lot. And that's even with Markell Jones, their true freshman, having 22 carries for 157 yards last week. They like to move it through the air if they can. So I think the secondary is going to be fine. It's always fine. The issue is, can the guys up front stop the run? Can Cody Polk, can Devondre Campbell, can Jacqueline, guys like that, take a step forward from last week and really force Purdue to try to move things through the air? Again, Minnesota doesn't give up big plays, but they need to make some of their own, as the turnovers haven't been coming for this Gopher defense. I think it's 14-14 in the fourth quarter. I think whoever the quarterback is leads them down with about 6 minutes left. Again, you get a Ryan Santoso field goal from 46 out, and this defense forces a turnover of David Blow, and you know Minnesota's able to run off the clock between Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks' legs. So I got Minnesota 17, Purdue 14. It's not going to be pretty, but I think everyone here will take will take a victory when you can get one, especially in the Big Ten. Purdue is 1-4, yes, but they've been competitive. This isn't the Purdue of last year. This isn't the dumpster fire 2013 Purdue. So I got Minnesota 17-14. You got Minnesota 24-21, correct?
Correct.
So I hope we're right, Luke, because it's going to be a lot easier to break down a win with Derek Burns next Monday night compared to a 31-10 loss like Rock predicts. I think where there's going to be a lot of soul searching for the Minnesota offensive staff if that's the case. But any final thoughts here before we wrap things up?
No. The only thing, you know, you're saying how are we going to score 17 points? You got to keep in mind, you know, Purdue's given up 33 on average for the season. So, you know, you're basically taking half of that. So I think that I know the offense has been down, but, you know, at some point you got to get a bounce. They haven't really had any breaks all year. So you got to hope that something will go their way. It's hard to really be able to find what that is. But, you know, this is a team that looked offensively a little bit more competent against Ohio and then, you know, struggled against a really, really good Northwestern defense. So it's really hard to find positives, but you know, a win would definitely be a positive in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. So I hope Luke and I are right. And again, folks, we thank you guys for listening. If you want to help and support us a little, you can, you know, check out my work on Gopher Digest there. We'd love to have you join the community. I can guarantee you it is the fastest growing Gopher internet community on the entire interwebs. It's been a steady, extreme growth since I've taken over, and we'd love to have you there. If you can, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can subscribe on Stitcher, RSS, wherever you found us. We appreciate it, and we'd love you a lot if you can give us a review. It really helps us. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at Ryan Burns MN. You can follow Luke at Luke Buer. But again, we thank you guys for listening, and let's hope the results are there come Monday night. Go Gophers.